Sorry for the few second delay there. I was in another room trying to grab some material that hit my mind at the last minute. So once again, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin. I'm alive. True Wealth, as it has been for probably a good decade or better, actually better, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus has been in business over two decades, always buying and selling all forms of precious metals, gold, silver, rare coins, collections, estates, accumulations. We deal in jewelry to a degree. People look for, we're not really into estate jewelry per se. We don't sell a lot of used jewelry. It's something that's kind of just a little bit odd to us. But we do have diamonds. We did recently have a profoundly significant investor buy a substantial amount of our diamonds. Radio show listener apparently came from a family of extraordinary wealth, I guess, for lack of a better term. And a lot of the family's wealth was apparently built over time on diamonds, and they had a real strong strong affection for diamonds. And so we sold a very, very significant quantity of our inventory to one individual, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But we still do have quite a wonderful selection. We actually kept some of the best stuff back for retail or for customers' needs. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044. That's local. Outside the area, toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. As I just briefly touched on, we do investment portfolios. It's a significant part of our existence. It's just an important part of who we are and what we do, helping people preserve their capital. Kind of an interesting perspective, I suppose, the fact that, the metals, we've had some interesting cycles in the years I've been around this business. And I've seen, the gold and silver pre-2001 get very low. And the interesting thing was then is we had this absolute artificially inflated casino market going in the stock market. Absolutely ridiculous. And one thing that you'll find with our, government, central banks and everything is they overdo it. The central banking system is so phenomenal, not in a good way, but they're so profoundly overboard in what they do. In other words, they have so much power and so much leverage, and they will fleece the wealth of your soul. And when they take it too far, and you guys have heard me lately speak considerably about the usdebtclock.org, I really encourage everyone to go there and take some time to look. I want you to really think about the numbers. It becomes such a numbing effect when you deal with the numbers on a individual basis. When you start to consider how big the numbers are and the fact that you and I, we owe it. I mean, we owe it. There's nowhere to hide from it. We owe it. And you just have to really take time to absorb it. And you got to use common sense and logic. When you look at the federal budget in terms of a household budget, it is absolutely senseless. And they basically, when you compare the two, you immediately understand bankruptcy, the bankrupt position that we're in. What's interesting is it's been a number of years, But there was an article written, and I've done them since, on comparing a personal budget to to the federal budget. And all you need to do is drop off the number of zeros, and you suddenly end up understanding what means. So basically, when you start to look at it, it's like a family making 54,000. And one study I'm looking here from 16, it's saying our budget, the way we function in 2016, is the equivalent of a family that makes $54,000 a year spending $64,000 per year, putting another $10,000 a year on a credit card, and having $272,000 in debt, okay, in unsecured debt. To be honest with you, that scenario is much more mild. I have a feeling that is probably a very diluted view of the reality of it all. But it is so beyond anything you can imagine. And what's crazy is people write, I was reading on this stuff this weekend, where they say it's not the same because our federal budget is different. They say, well, you don't have a AAA credit rating and you don't understand. Folks, numbers are simple. Numbers are the, you know, like they say, math is the code, you know, it's basically the language of creation. Math is the irrefutable, black and white, understandable, comprehensible factor. And then you can get into, you know, physics where you're into antimatter and, you know, all this stuff. We're not getting into that. That's not math. That's all theory. So if you remove eight zeros, here's another scenario. Remove eight zeros, and this has been, what year is this? Who knows? 2011. This was running around in 2011, okay? Now, the numbers are crazy worse than this right now. So if you remove however many I said, eight zeros in 2011, our federal budget is like your family making $21,700 a year, which obviously you couldn't live on, but we could double these numbers. We could say $43,400. Spending $76,400, so almost, you know, 70% more than you take in. You can't do it. Putting another $33,000 on a credit card. So let's repeat this. Our federal budget, here's how we operate. It's like a family that makes $43,400 a year, spends $76,400 a year, puts another $33,000 on a credit card, and that credit card currently has a balance close to $300,000. And then this budget cuts, where they always say they cut the deficit, your budget, your family budget, if you were the federal government in 2016, would have reduced the budget by $770 a year, which is a racket. When they say, oh, it reduces the deficit, I can't even believe the right and the left spew this foolishness. You know what they mean by that? They mean that there is an expected increase in spending on a year-to-year basis. And they say, well, my plan reduces the deficit. It reduces that. No, it doesn't reduce. If I say to you, hey, my family reduced our debt by X amount per year or X percent per year, do you think that what I'm really saying is, you know, we normally spend $76,000 a year on a $40,000 income, But now we're only spending $75.5. If I say I reduced our debt, do you think that, or do you think that you mean that we owe X amount of money and I reduce the amount of X by a certain percentage? Of course, that's what you mean. That's where all these politicians spin and twist and turn and lie. And it's, we have hit a level of corruption. I've done a lot of historical research on our founding fathers and things like this. And unfortunately, politics has had a real stinky side for a long time. There's guys who are good at it. And folks, I really believe, and of course I'm skewed, but I really do believe that the godless side of history always seems to be the catalyst of the greatest lack of ethics and the greatest dishonesty. And they behave, you know, I've said often, socialist side, godless, conservative side, I'm sorry, liberal side, socialistic and godless, conservative side is more biblical and more right and wrong, just the way it is, like it or not, which is why I believe the left is becoming so angry and hostile, why we are facing the first anti-free speech movement in history. We have gotten to a point where they do not want to hear the truth. Can you imagine? Can you imagine this? What have we done? We have not taught civics, constitutional law, constitutional theory in our public schools appropriately since the Department of Education, the National Education Association or whatever it is, government-run Department of Education, has gained control of our school systems in the 70s. Before that, our children, our students, they were raised American. Now they are raised communist. You might say, oh, Kevin, that is so radical. I can't even believe you would ever talk like that. You know, we're not like that. And then you've got this younger generation begging for socialism, stating they are literally begging for it. They want it. They say they're prepared for it. They literally desire it. I mean, do you really think that our founding fathers would have ever dreamt of such a thing? Government handouts being a normal accepted part of society, illegal immigrants, for goodness sakes, pouring in the country and having half of America defending it. Folks, there's so much idiocy and foolishness. When I listen to this garbage on TV or wherever I pick up my news or where, and folks, I'll admit I am open-minded, I guess, as far as I'll listen to opposing views, but I am so rarely moved or persuaded by their hypocritical hype and emotional rhetoric. They use anecdotal examples all the time. You ask them a question. Folks, if you're talking with somebody about these issues and you are trying to discuss things, okay, you're going to see them talk over the top of you, but be aware of something. Anecdotal examples are rubbish. And what I mean by that is this. They have what's called a straw man argument. They create a false person who fits the perfect scenario. I have a friend. Okay, I'm going to give you an example, they'll say. You know, I know a guy who is an illegal immigrant. He works two jobs. He's got six kids. You know, those kids get up on Saturdays and they clean the streets of their neighborhood. And these kids have, you know, they've participated in charities and volunteer work. And, you know, they're contributing to society. And this guy writes his check every month to the IRS without even stating who he is because he knows he owes tax, you know. In other words, if you're listening to me, you're like, what are you talking about? That doesn't exist. But the point is, they'll use anecdotal debate topics, issues, examples. It's baloney. It's not true. They'll always have an anecdote. and you say, prove it. You know, otherwise, don't state it. Anecdotal. And I'll tell you where that pops up bad, in federal law enforcement. I was speaking with a friend of mine recently about a topic I won't get into, and I was stating facts, and then he used an anecdotal example in it. You know, in another situation, I was talking to somebody about, you know, this war on pharmaceuticals. I hate the pharmaceutical companies. I know they've destroyed our insurances. They've destroyed our medical rates. They're huge, corrupt conglomerates. Do not get me wrong. However, with this big push against opiates and everything, sure, opiates bad, heroin bad. You know, you go all the way back to the 30s with the movies Reefer Madness. Go online and watch that. You will not even believe your eyes. It was propaganda put out by the media or by the government. Don't get me wrong. I'm not pro-drug at all. But this government onslaught of hundreds of billions of dollars a year to combat it, and we've got the worst drug problem really for a modernized civilized society in the world, and we put the amount of money we put into fighting it is hundreds if not thousands of times more than anywhere else. Are we that dumb? But anyway, a person I was talking to, you know, we were talking about it, and then all of a sudden the anecdotal comes up. Well, I know a guy whose daughter had a surgery, and when she got out, they gave her like 250 of such and such pill, and it's like, and she was just a teenager. She didn't need it. Okay, here's an anecdotal story. In my mind, I'm like, whatever. You know, I don't believe it. But the point is, it's not, it isn't facts, and we need to deal in facts and evidence. That's what God even says in the Bible, you know. It's God's nature to hide a thing, and it's man's nature to find it out. God gave you a natural level of curiosity to seek and look and want to find out and want to know. And you can be messed up in your life. You can learn, you can be forced to squelch that curiosity. You can be intellectually lazy. Just like people are slothful or sluggardish in the Bible, you can be intellectually lazy and you get to be categorized as a fool. If you can't use your mind because you never did, you can't think, you can't construct, you ignore the natural curiosity, you may have squelched it completely. I had a show lately about quenching the spirit. Folks, if you don't respond to the Holy Spirit that dwells within you right now, you might as well not even be walking with God. And what I mean is, what is your walk with God about? Is it about you feeling better about yourself and making your life good and blah, blah, blah? Or is it about serving and helping others? Is it about reaching out and assisting others and making others better people? And you know that's what it is. So it's not about just focusing on yourself and thinking about yourself. It's about getting out and stepping out and making a difference. And if you're intellectually lazy, you're of little or no use. You can be an absolute fool, and you can't be of a great use. And if you're not responding to the Holy Spirit, which is the primary fact I was getting to, you can't be on call 24/7 to be one of God's specialists, to be one of his top performing children. He needs to be able to poke you in the ribs when you're, I don't care if you're, you know, at a harvest party, I don't care if you're at the mall, it doesn't matter, standing in line at the grocery store, getting your car washed, whatever. God needs you to be sensitive to where he puts somebody in your life at that moment and you deal with it. And I'll tell you something else about living by the Spirit. You know, Christ made multiple points about, you say you're going to do this tomorrow and you're going to do that today and you're going to have your little schedule. You're going to get out your day timer and here's how your day is going to go. Do not fall prey to setting your schedule so that God can't alter it. And you know, I've seen so many people do that. It drives me nuts. People are more important than anything else. People are the most important thing you'll deal with. You will never get down to the end of your life and say, gosh darn it, I just did not get enough stuff done in my day timer. You will value relationships. You're going to value those interpersonal connections. You're going to value time with family and friends. If you have problems with family, you forgive. You forgive and you forget, and you put a steel barrier between the past and the present. God uses your past to empower you to a bright future. The devil uses your past to empower you to self-destruction. The devil uses your past to make you to fill you with regrets of all the things you didn't do right, and to want make you think you have to go back and fix it. But God wants you to take that past to grow and improve and become wiser and be motivated to move on and grow closer to Him. Do not let the devil pull you down with your past, whatever it may be. We've all got one. Once in a while, you meet a sociopath who has no real remorse, no conscience. I hope few of those are listening. But it's so important that you let God work in your life, that you are available all the time. I remember being in a situation, in a kind of a small group setting, with a member of the small group whose son had literally, he was living far away, like in Alaska or something, and he had broken, and this is sad for her, he had broken into a pharmacy with friends, stolen a bunch of drugs, and then went and took too many and OD'd. Well, there's the side of, well, you know, you get what you, you know, deserve, or you reap what you sow, or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that we were facing an absolutely crushed and brokenhearted mother beyond imagination. So the small group, rather than doing the Bible study that week, became a ministry to talk to her, to comfort her, to hold, you know, to just give her comfort. One member of that small group came to a point where he pulls his watch up, and this gal's literally crying. Trust me, this is a bad day for her. This guy whips up his watch and goes, well, we better wrap things up. It's 8:30 and or whatever it was, 8 o'clock, and we got to wrap things up now, so let's wrap. And I looked at him. I said, are you serious? Well, yeah. He goes, we're done. We're done. You know, I got to get home. I got to do things. And I'm like, I mean, you're just like, what is wrong with you? You know, I mean, seriously, what is wrong with you? If we cannot spare a few minutes to alter our schedule to help somebody in that place, what are we to God? What is our faith? What is it about? Are you a Christian because God saved you and now you kind of cleaned your life up and it's a little bit easier? Or is it just a patch you wear on your chest so you can feel better than others? We are not to be arrogant or pious or haughty as believers. We are to be lowly. We are to be servants and sacrificial lambs to our fellow man. Servanthood, servant leadership, they call it. Jesus Christ, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Master of the universe, washed his disciples' feet, which, folks, you know, feet get dirty. Back then, they got filthy. Because they were walking around, they didn't have beautiful paved sidewalks and Centennial Trail and bike trails all over back then. They walked and walked and walked many, 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 many miles. You know, it was the lowly point. It was the servant's work to clean a man's feet. Disgusting in some cases. But Jesus stooped down and cleaned his feet to show his love. This is who we're called to be. And people will symbolically wash people's feet. And I've seen these ceremonies in front of church services and stuff. And honestly, to me, I think those kinds of things are meant to be behind closed doors in private. I don't think a lot of people walk out of there truly inspired because it's a public display. It's a private sacrifice that you give to show somebody your love for them. But it's our life should be patterned around that. And I'm just saying, to reiterate, be available. Make time. If you don't have time for people, you don't have time for God. You've got to be available for the Holy Spirit. On the other hand, there's probably a few of those listeners out there who talk people's ear off incessantly. Time is a commodity that God gave us all. And we are accountable for what we do with that time. So at the same time, we make time for people and we make time for God. We also respect the time of others. We honor and respect others' time. Time is a very valuable commodity. You can't buy it. You can't get it back once it's spent. It feels like you got tons of it, but when you come to the end of your life, you didn't have much. You didn't have enough because your life gets full. Our lives get full, especially as Americans. We are born in debt, and we die in debt. Whether you do individually or not, as a member of this society, you have an astounding amount of debt assigned to your back, which I kind of gone over recently, the brevity of this. You hit the road running in this nation. Now, you grow up, you go to church, you go to school. You know, schools now are becoming communistic brainwashing programs when originally the purpose of school was to make you a good citizen, a wonderful citizen, wise and literate and intelligent, knowing how to think, not what to think. When you study our founding fathers' philosophical and theological reasoning, and writing and articulation, my goodness, unbelievable. Unlike anything you've seen. You can't hardly find that now in college professors. College professors are spewing vitriol and creating anarchy. And by the way, folks, our government was meant to run on a thin line bordering on anarchy. But at the same time, rules and regulations, a governing authority, a constitutional style biblical, the Constitution is a biblical form of government. It's devoted to freedom because freedom is something that comes from God, our ability to speak freely, to live freely. We've had so many of those rights taken away, but we are now begging for literally communism. And I'm telling you, even recently, there is a law that was passed in our area in Washington State called the Hearst Property Law. The Hearst Property Law is hidden under environmentalistic deception. And what it says is, and this is a fact, if you're not a land developer, it doesn't affect you, but it will affect you in the price of land and the ability to move and be mobile. What the Hearst Law states, and this was passed just, I think, around Christmas time, this is a big blow to a lot of people, especially landowners and developers. It states that if your land has not A, already been connected or annexed to a city water and sewer, and connected to it, or B, if your land already doesn't have an approved permitted well associated with a home or approved and permitted in order to build a home, you can no longer bring water to that property. You cannot annex to join city water, and you cannot put in a new well. You can put it in, you just won't get it permitted. You won't be able to build. So people that had hundreds of acres that they were hoping someday maybe to subdivide or move to a different part or whatever, they don't have that ability anymore. And I say this is more communism. You say, well, why would you call that communism, Kevin? Well, let me tell you why. The 10 planks of communism, as handed down in the Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, which, as a side note, FDR, who is one of the most homaged and honored presidents of all time, was a radical, hardcore socialist who kept us in the deepest, darkest depression until his death and demise, drove us into world wars and all kinds of things. He tried to propose what was called the New Deal. New Deal number one was a basic verbatim, line-by-line execution of the Communist Manifesto. He was a communist at heart. Later evidence in the Freedom of Information Act shows that he had 36 cabinet members that were on Soviet payroll as communists. He had communists in the White House, spies, receiving money from Russia to spy on the U.S. Probably knew it. William Sheehy, his chief of staff, drew up an executive order giving him full dictatorial powers over the United States. William Sheehy kept begging him to execute that executive order. FDR procrastinated, thank you, God. And they believed that they knew best. And he created the first New Deal, the 10 Planks of Communism. Supreme Court shot him down. He created two more bills that were very similar. Supreme Court shot him down. He threatened seriously to sign an executive order, adding six more members to the Supreme Court, bringing it from 9 to 15. This would allow him to add six favored justices that would rule in his favor under all circumstances. I'm not kidding you, folks. This is the kind of stuff this man did. I mean, if you realize how radically ridiculous and what a level of disrespect that is for our system, but this is who FDR was. So the Hearst property law adheres to Communist Manifesto number one. So Karl Marx advocated the use of any means, including a violent revolution, to bring about socialist dictatorship. He suggested, or I guess whatever you want to, he created 10 political goals for developed countries like the United States to measure how close they were to being fully communistic. Now, how far has the United States, which we call the bastion of freedom and free markets and private property, how far have we gone down this Marxist road to fulfill the socialist aims of the left? So you be the judge. Here are the planks. Number one, the abolition of private property in land and application of all rents of land to public purpose. Meaning, take away property rights, tax the tar out of it so that you can never own it, and apply the money, take your wealth by taxation and apply it to the government and make the government more powerful than man, than the citizens. Folks, we accept this as normal government behavior now. Heavy taxation. Oh, you got to pay more taxes for this, more taxes for that. Today I was listening on the radio people I respect, you know, more gas tax, more this tax, more that tax. Oh, gas tax will solve it all, they say. And then they use the example how Europe has like a $6 a gallon tax on gas. So what? We should copy Europe. And then they bring up, you know, I hear recently in tax law, oh, we had a tax as high as 94% under FDR on high income. During Truman or Eisenhower, we had an 85% high marginal tax bracket over 200,000. So somehow, because we were that dumb then, we need to be that dumb now. And that tax level back then crushed our economy, and we had to abolish it. We had to abandon it. We keep going that direction. We were at a 50% tax rate, and then Reagan came in and cleaned it up. The economy boomed. Life was good. Everything's okay. People get amnesia. We get Bush Sr., who pretty much skated, as far as I'm concerned. He did little except, you know, go after Iraq when they were invading Kuwait, create Desert Storm, the Gulf War. And then we go to Clinton. And, you know, we start to raise taxes again, you know, and then we go to Bush and then Bush Jr. And then even under Bush, I mean, taxes were cut here and cut there. We get Obama. He just breaks out a can of, you know what? And back we go. We keep going this direction. We've got this socialistic mindset that's ridiculous. The word rich is a four-letter word. I mean, you go to college campuses where, you know, there are certain four-letter words that used to not be acceptable on that campus. Now they're almost required. But one four-letter word you better not say because you might get your head ripped off is talk about anything positive about the rich. The rich is a false misnomer. The rich is a sector of society that has been successful. We watch movies and read books, and the rich are always perceived from the outside ignorance looking in, and we always have to show how evil and rotten and bad they are. If a rich man does something bad, cheats on his wife, it reflects on all of these filthy, rotten, no good, untrustworthy rich men. If a poor man cheats on his wife, he's just a man that cheated on his wife. I'm not saying either is okay. I'm just using his example. They somehow they're getting this liberal mindset. So the first is the abolition of all property rights and taxation thereof. Okay. Then they add things like eminent domain. The courts, then there's the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which created eminent domain in 1868. Well, why do you suppose they did that? I mean, this was in the Reconstruction era after the Civil War. You know, they needed to do certain things to advance growth, like train tracks and things like this. I mean, to a degree, it made some sense. They'd buy people out, whatever. You know, it mostly applied to large ranch owners in the Midwest. Now we got eminent domain, gives the government the ability to confiscate your property for public usage, and it's done a lot more than you think. You don't hear a lot about it because they persuade people with money. But then every once in a while you hear stories of people, they just don't want to give it up. And should they? I don't know. But the point is, when they tell you what you can and can't do with your property rights have been, your private property rights have been abolished. That's Communist Manifesto number one. Number two, a heavy progressive and or graduated income tax. Well, we all accept this. Not really, I hope. But, you know, the left pounds this on us like, well, the rich have to pay their fair share. The rich have to pay their fair share. It's just not fair that the working man pays tax. It's got to be paid by the rich, the rich, the rich. The rich has so much money, they should pay an 85% tax. It's a graduated income tax. What does that do? It absolutely does redistribute the wealth. You know, you've heard the saying that if you took all the money away from everybody and spread it out evenly, though 98% of those who are rich today would end up rich again because they've got entrepreneurial skills, they've got wisdom, they've got drive, they've got courage. I spent years in banking analyzing people's financial situations. I can tell you what's interesting. An entrepreneurial spirit is truly different. They see opportunity. They go for it. Now, there are people that would consider themselves entrepreneurs who are fools. They think it's just all about positive mental attitude. They don't know what they don't know. That is sheer foolishness. If you're going to go into business, you better know what you're doing, because there's a reason that two-thirds of them fail in the first 3 years. Heavy progressive income tax, and it never will stop. It never will stop. They don't want a fair tax. You get even Trump in office, and he's trying to do certain things, and he just can't accomplish his goals. He wants to put in a tax that's sensible, that makes sense, that will create jobs. The more you tax something, the less you get of it. The less you tax, the more you get. So one theory on taxation that I don't completely disagree with is what we call a consumption tax, like a gas tax, but only if it's counterbalanced by a reduction in income tax, because there's a voluntary aspect to it, and there is also a lack of oppression to the poor. Certain taxes, especially taxes on living items, including gasoline, hurt the poor. I mean, let's just be honest about it. They hurt the poor. And so, we've got to be sensitive to that. But at the same time, we've got to be fair. When we leave more money in the hands, and the word rich is ridiculous. Let's say when we leave more money in the hands of the successful, and someone out there is going, what about people that inherit their money? Well, that's, when you talk about higher levels of wealth, that's not a big part of it. But even if it was, it doesn't matter, because they've got to have a brain to hang on to it, don't they? So heavy progressive income tax. Number three, the abolition of rights of inheritance. So this is a big debate that's going on. I can't even believe the other day I was listening to Fox News, and I heard Greg Gutfeld, I heard him talking about the fact that how ethically wrong an inheritance tax was. He's like, look, these people are dead. He said, an inheritance tax is effectually reaching into the grave of a dead person, into their coffin, and pulling money out of their pockets. He said they paid their tax their whole life. They accumulated whatever wealth they have. They're dead. They did their civic duty. He said, we need to leave them alone. Then the liberal Juan Williams pipes up and says, oh yeah, we need to just leave the rich alone. It's like, why is, first of all, an inheritance tax isn't just the rich, but that's the lie they use to get you and me or whoever to vote to approve this rubbish. And then whenever they get something in, if you look at a law they're trying to pass that you're voting on and you're like, well, at this level, it's not too harmful. But once this got into, into a bill, into legislature, if they changed the execution of it, it could become very destructive. Don't vote for it, because I assure you it will end up there. Absolutely, without a doubt. So they want an income or an inheritance tax. So you basically go through your life. They want a 50% tax. Hillary was saying 75 on upper end income. You might think, well, that doesn't affect you, but that's really not the way to even think. We need to think, that we don't want to associate with thieves. We don't want to, we don't even want to condone it. The Bible's very clear about that we don't want to even be involved in condoning it. I had a friend one time, a guy I knew pretty well. There was a guy in this business in town, Steve Baldwin, and he had a company called Panorex, I think, in the 80s and up till the early 90s. he was indicted on a whole bunch of fraud, and he took a bunch of people's money, and he had storage, and he just did a bunch of bad stuff, and he went to prison. And when he got out, he wasn't supposed to have a business license. And another person in the business I know said that he basically assisted him in getting back into business. And, you know, apparently he was using the business license of a relative or whatever. I don't know. But the point is, I said, why would you do that? He says, I said, he hurt a lot of people. He stole from people. I have customers that got burned by him for good money. Lots of money, $50,000 and $100,000. But the feds only indicted on like 9 charges because they were airtight and they didn't want to chase down other stuff because it loosened their case. Stuff that was like in their safe deposit boxes that wasn't documented properly, whatever. He said, well, he never stole from me. And I thought, you know, that's really not who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to have a set of standards, a set of rules that doesn't change. Proverbs 29:24 says, he who is a partner with a thief hates his own life. He hears the oath, but tells nothing. In other words, he knows that evil abounds. He hears things he knows as he shouldn't. He knows, he hears the curse, he knows the truth, but he doesn't. So it's basically saying anybody who's a partner with a thief hates his own life. You just don't want to be affiliated with that kind of stuff. It's not good. I think we would all probably agree on that. I hope. And, you know, you don't want to turn a blind eye. Let's pump through the rest of these Communist Manifesto. Number 4. Confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels, okay? So we've got all this civil asset forfeiture. If they think your money's being used for drugs, if you have too much money, they think it's going to be used in a crime, they only need to develop intent. They confiscate before you're ever convicted, and you play hell, excuse the term, getting the money back. I've seen people go through some cases. I'm familiar with it from both sides. It's not personally, but I've been witness to it in our business. It's terrible. It's wrong. But that's part of communism. And we do everything in the way of, it says, you know, we call them government seizures, tax liens, forfeitures. You know, it's all the bad guy. We always look at the bad guy. You know, they get these words like, the imprisonment of terrorists and those who speak out or write against the government. And, you know, we've got this 1997 crime and terrorist bill, or the IRS confiscation of property without due process. Folks, this is where we're at. This is scary. This is wrong and it's bad. And you might think, I've actually heard people say, well, if you obey the law, you ain't got nothing to worry about. Folks, you talk like that, you're thick. You don't get it. You don't compromise morals. You look out for others. You stand up for them. You want to help, to do right, to stand up for what is true and right, and defend the victim. There's something powerful about helping somebody who can't help themselves. So think about that. We need to stand strong to defend those who are being oppressed. We just need to put our heart out to protect those who are being unjustly oppressed. I'll put it that way. There's so much power in an innocent, uninvolved person becoming involved. It just changes the whole scenario. 10 planks of communism, number 5. Centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national or central bank with state capitals and exclusive monopolies. I don't even need to tell you about the Federal Reserve System. You're very aware of that. Federal Reserve Act 1913. Definitely a national bank. People were deceived to get it through. It was passed emergency meeting of Congress Christmas Eve, 1913, 11 members showed up. It politically manipulates everything. Interest rates, economic behavior, stock markets. There's a monopoly on legal counterfeiting of money. They're creating money that is constitutionally forbidden. Congress gave this up. They were given that duty to hang on to it. This was their baby. The Constitution said, Congress, you are responsible for the creation and regulation of money. It has to be in the form of gold and silver, and this is it. Now, folks, the gold and silver goes all the way back in history as money, all the way to the Bible, deeply embedded clearly in the Bible. It is where you need to preserve and protect your wealth. It isn't an investment per se. I mean, you're storing up your wealth. I call it wealth and capital preservation. You need it. If you want to be aligned biblically, you need it. If you want your life to be aligned, if your financial well-being gives you displeasure or discomfort or whatever, you need to do this. Because I used to say all the time, I could not even tell you, I couldn't even count the number of people who have told me that once they made the move into God-ordained financial vehicles, gold, silver, coins, investment portfolio type stuff, they said there was a sense of freedom. They no longer have to stare at the computer or newspaper every day and see how the markets did. There's something wrong about that speculatory mindset. It's a short-term speculatory mindset. And it's, you know, investments in stocks, it's a short-term fair-weather friend mentality. You want to get in, get out, get what you can. It's driven by greed. You're betting, you're gambling. You're a speculator. I guess I don't know how to say it. Paper investors are really in speculators. And they're told they're investors, which help in order to build false confidence and make them feel sophisticated. That's what it is. It makes the investment feel more sophisticated. But really what you're doing is people are taking your money, they're putting it in a vehicle that may have become socially acceptable, and they're cutting big fat chunks of, you know, of profit out to, you know, to feed their own coffers. So number five was a central bank. So we got number one, abolition of property rights, basically the EPA and taxation on your property, heavy progressive income tax, inheritance tax. We've got property seizures in tax liens and things like that. We've got centralized credit, number five, Federal Reserve Bank. Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. I mean, we've got Department of Transportation and the FCC, and they can shut off anything they want whenever they want. They control all transportation and communication. That is number six, the Communist Manifesto. Number seven, they say extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, bringing into cultivation wastelands, improvement of soil, you know, blah, 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 EPA, EPA, EPA. While the U.S. doesn't have a, you know, collective farms yet, we have co-ops. And all this stuff has failed so miserably. These people that want communism, show me where it succeeded. It has not. We, however, do not have a significant, we do have a significant involvement of our government in our agriculture in the form of price support, CRP, conservation resource programs. We've got subsidies, acreage allotments, land use controls, the Desert Entry Act, you know, and I could go on and on. You've got Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Reclamation, Bureau of Mines, National Park Services. IRS controls businesses through corporate regulations. Number eight, Communist Manifesto, the equal obligation of all to work. Equal pay for equal work, right? All women and men, they have a right to work. A right to work. Is this what God wanted? Or did he actually create a family structure that was balanced so the parents could raise the kids? No wonder we've got this lost generation, right? They're building these industrial armies, unions, people demanding this and demanding that. A right to wages, a right to work. It's interesting. And then number nine is combination of agriculture with manufacturing and the abolition of the distinction between town and country. It's planning reorganization, city, you know, corporate zoning or federal zoning. I don't have time to get into it. Number 10, free education for all children in government schools. That's the abolition. This is what he wrote. Abolition of children's factory labor in present form, converted into a combination of education and production, creating members of a socialistic society. We're 10 out of 10, folks. That's where we are. We're not free. We've been communized. How many people know it? How many people understand it? We've got liberals, which are welfare state fascists. They want the government in control of everything, and they want socialistic monetary management. They're fools. Blows my mind that people can get degrees in econ and then talk this stuff. So I'm obviously short on time. Short story long, long story short. You need to do what the Bible tells you to do. Be conservatively wise. No matter what perspective you look at it, you need to preserve and protect your finances in a biblically conservative way. Coins Plus specializes in it. I say 401ks, IRAs, savings, whatever you got, give us a call, 444-0044, local, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, or through the website at coinsplus.com. We really do help you build awesome portfolios, and I've been working a lot on a lot of them, and I love it, and I love helping people. And thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. We'll be back on Wednesday. Bye-bye.